And you are listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It is time now for our March edition of Campus Connection. I'm your host, Angela Dunning, and I'm joined here in the studio by Superintendent Erica Kluepainter and School Board President Sarah Holmgren. We will be discussing tonight's school board meeting and anything else that we might want to bring up. Hello. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. Sarah's got a nasty cold.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Sorry.
That's a good thing we're masking.
Yes. Try not to share it with anybody
in
else.
In the small studio here. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for being here. Tonight's meeting, I wanted folks to know that it's both in person and virtual, which is kind of, I think, probably maybe convenient. I don't know if that's a long-term plan, but that's something that came up during the pandemic, just having meetings, the virtual option where people can kind of video conference in if they want. So that's both kinds available. You can go to the high school, middle school library, or you can join on Ring Central video conferencing. And then, of course, KFSK will be broadcasting the meeting live if people just want to listen.
Sure.
They can tune in and stream or turn on the radio. So looking at tonight's agenda, one major topic is reconsidering the COVID mitigations at the schools, which is something that the board planned to do every meeting anyway, but it looks like you have some recommendations as the superintendent.
Yes, I think just to, you know, kind of recap through where we've gone really since Christmas and honestly all along, really trying to take into account always the latest guidance that's coming from the CDC. We've said that all the way through, trying to work within the recommendations of our local health care providers and our public health and our state Department of Health and Social Services advisors. So I think it's been important that we just kind of keep trying to always keep that at the forefront, you know, when we are making decisions, because there are a lot of, you know, strong opinions, strong feelings, a lot of ideas, you know, about what should and shouldn't be happening in the schools with regard to masking and really with other mitigations as well, you know, as time is going along. And so really watching those recommendations has been important, I think, as a way of guiding us along. I think that knowing in between last meeting and this meeting on February 25th, the CDC did put out some updated guidance related specifically to masking, and also just watching the trends of the cases of COVID related to Omicron and what that looks like across, well, really across the world, and then within the country, and then of course across Alaska, and then filtering down to even within Southeast in our own community. So we've been, you know, monitoring those things along the way as well. And of course, meeting with our health advisory team and talking with them and, you know, just looking very specifically at vaccination rates here, past positive rates, you know, the pieces that we already have in place related to other mitigation strategies within the schools. Yeah, lots of those layered approaches that we've been trying to take all along. So, you know, so looking back in January, we pulled back some of the mitigations related to contact tracing, because that was changing at the state level and it was becoming so insurmountable to sort of manage. And really, public health was recommending that it didn't make as much sense anymore. Just letting people know you may have been exposed, please do some testing at home. And people did a great job of doing that and notifying us, you know, of cases. So that was a good, I think, a good step that was taken in January. And then I think in February, as everybody knows, a lot of discussion at that meeting amongst the board members and hearing feedback as well on different sides of the issue related to, you know, putting into place kind of some other levels again, looking sort of at the red, yellow, green model that's been out there for a while, and modeling it after a couple of different districts and what they've tried, and then watching how it's working in other districts, even in the state, you know, how is it going? And we certainly have had some examples that have not gone well, and then there have been some examples that are going pretty well, you know, places that have kind of pulled back at a slow level. From what I've seen, that seems to be a good model, and I think as we've all talked a little bit about things that have happened in Craig, for example, we'll just take that and talk about that a little bit, and that has been a very challenging situation for the students and staff and families, really, in Craig, to be optionally masking this entire year and not really trying to take kind of a layered, measured approach to it. You know, they've had 4 or 5 basketball games. We've had 12 or 14. You know, there's a lot of things that have been canceled and impacted there. So I do think that the measured approach has been important and is worthwhile. So I think we're looking to make that next step, potentially right now, you know, and I'm putting that forward. It's kind of the next logical step. People have had multiple opportunities for vaccination, 5 and up, and we do have a pretty significant number. And also just monitoring what's been happening over the last couple of months with cases, especially utilizing the new quarantine requirements and kids coming back sooner, staff coming back sooner. We are seeing pretty good protection, anecdotally, really, I guess, quantitatively, with our students and staff related to vaccination. So it does seem to be that we've got students that if they're exposed within a class setting, they're not as likely to end up with a case, or if they do end up with cases so far, they've been relatively mild and more like a cold. So that's been good. And then talking with our medical professionals here locally about that, you know, we were all kind of waiting, I think, for a huge spike in Omicron cases here. We've always lagged a little bit behind, you know, just being in Southeast and small and all that. So I think we've all been waiting, and I think the board wanted to talk about that as well. Like, let's not jump in too soon to doing things here. Let's see what happens. And, you know, it's been trickling cases a little bit along the way, and that's within the school and within the community. The numbers have not leapt up in a huge way, which is really good. And so this latest guidance from the CDC says to take all of that into account, you know, to look at severity of cases, hospitalizations, and capacity within your hospital, as well as just general numbers of cases. So to this point, I think it's potentially time to, you know, look at a recommended optional process. I'm going to recommend for after spring break, but of course that's up to the board to, you know, determine. So anyway.
Yeah. And when you say after spring break, do you mean the day they return?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think that gets us through regionals. We've got a whole bunch of kids that are out of town right now down in Ketchikan, and Ketchikan's another community that has made this shift in their school district. A lot of, there are multiple school districts in Southeast that have at this point. So Skagway has, Haines has, Ketchikan, Wrangell just did last week. Craig already is, and I do think Southeast Island is already there. I think Klawock is discussing it on Prince of Wales Island. Not sure where Annette Island is, Metlakatla, at this point, but people are watching it, and I think, not that that's a reason to do it or not do it, but I mean just to sort of see the progression in different communities and in different school districts and kind of watching how it's going for them, which we've had a little bit of benefit of watching that as well, and not seeing major spikes in communities or schools that have done this. And as people have continued to remind us, there are no other real locations in town here, for example, that are doing a lot of masking at this point. It is the school, pretty much, the hospital, maybe a church or two. I'm not sure of that. I guess I shouldn't say that. I think there might be a few other locations in town that are. So it's probably time to take that step. I tend to be more conservative about this. I don't think that's any surprise to people out there. So it's a little hard for me to say it, but I do think it's time to start moving forward with that. So I don't know if Sarah has anything else to add to that, but
yeah, Sarah.
Well, I speak for myself, not as a board member, not the entire board. So that's why we have 5 of us. And I tend to think that that it's going to be approved just based on previous conversations that we've had in February and January. I would be voting for it. I'm a little concerned about after spring break, but what I'm hoping is that people continue to just test at home if they're feeling under the weather or know that they've been exposed so that they don't bring it to school and share it with others, because it will be optional masking. I can think of my own 2 kids. One will probably continue to wear her mask despite no matter what, which is her comfort level, and that's just fine. To be honest, I don't know what my 14-year-old will do. He's a good example of being vaccinated and boosted and was exposed at school and did not get it. So I think, you know, that's going to be really my drumbeat is, and it has been all along, is, you know, my kids have been multiply exposed throughout the school year and neither one have caught it. I'm not holding my breath that we may get it at some point. Maybe we've just been lucky, but I really think it has a huge portion of why they haven't caught it, because their other friends have, and those other friends have not been vaccinated. That being said, I do feel like we are kind of moving into this new phase of living to learn, or learning to live with it, and that it's not going to change. And so and all along, I've said, let's follow the CDC guidelines, and the CDC has now changed their guidelines, and I'm comfortable moving toward the recommendations that they've made for schools.
Okay, so I guess using you as an example, mm-hmm. Sarah, because you have a cold, and so you're wearing a mask. And
I am.
Is it still going to be, would it still be symptom-free school, that kind of level? Okay.
Yes, and that was definitely something in talking with the medical advisory team locally, that we were all very clear about that. You know, they said really still trying to, you know, keeping the encouragement going for the at-home testing for people, keeping the symptom-free policy, and then, of course, making good masks available for anyone who wants them, and making that acceptable and okay, and, you know, that sort of thing, because it is important. And they do, that was a big part of the conversation with them. They said, and then really just still talking to people about vaccinations. I mean, this isn't a political thing for me. I don't think it's a political thing for Sarah either. It's all about her kids staying in school. It's how it was for me too. And hopefully staying healthy. And you know, like we're reading, and what the research is showing is that for now, this particular variant does seem to be much less dangerous. It definitely spreads quickly, but it does seem to be much less damaging, you know, to people. So at this point, so I think it's important. I mean, we're watching that. Don't want anybody to get it, but that's probably not, you know, completely possible. So moving forward with that, I think it is really important to have that symptom-free focus and lots of testing, and then just staying out if you have it. And people are doing that. I mean, I will say people have been really good about that. So parents have been letting us know, and you know, they'll often keep a sibling home or whatever too, or keep doing lots of testing at home. That's usually what people will say. Do you need tests at home? They're like, nope, we've got a ton. You know, we do a lot of testing in our home, you know, that kind of thing. And I think a lot of people do. People asked for that kind of responsibility level. And I think for the most part, people are doing it, you know, which is good.
Now, as a, you know, superintendent the last few years, I can't even imagine the number of meetings that you've had specifically on the pandemic. And you mentioned that health team, I can't remember the exact name, but you meet the local team with the school district employees and mm-hmm. PMC and the public health nurse. Are you still meeting weekly?
Not weekly.
Okay.
Yeah. Nope. We've been doing even every couple weeks at this point. We met last week. We probably won't meet today. You know, there's nothing necessarily hugely new at this point, other than we're still kind of holding steady with very low cases, which is good. And hospitalizations are zero with COVID related at this point, and have been. And that was something else they did talk about last week when I was asking, because if you look at the CDC map, that's one of the things they talk about when you move to optional considerations, in addition to your local considerations, which they do say you need to, you know, take that into account. Look at your very specific stats for your community. But on the CDC map right now, we're still considered red. And when I asked about that, like our health team, you know, well, why would that be? You know, we have two cases, or, you know, that kind of thing. And they said it kind of lags behind, you know, what the cases are. They come out, and then it might be 7 days later or 10 days later. Or the recent, some of the recent cases that were associated with the Mountain View Manor, you know, outbreak, you kind of have like a group of 8 or 10 that might, you know, be positive, or maybe there's a couple of hospitalizations related to that. And in a town this size with this type of a population, it takes a case or two, you know, to basically put you, you know, there. So, yeah. So, I mean, I think we're all a little bit, have some trepidation about it. They do too, of course, because we tend to, be a little more conservative on that, and consider that, you know, if I had my perfect world, I would say that we would keep going with masking. But I think we're to the point where it's time to consider that. We're moving into outdoor activities coming this spring. The weather's changing. It's beautiful today. Hopefully we'll be outside, and windows will still be open. And we also did use some of the recent ARP funds to purchase air purifiers for each room. So every classroom actually has one of those now. So, you know, and if you see that in medical offices now, or other offices, you see those, it's just kind of common now. They'll probably just be around, you know. So I think all those layers help still having kids wash their hands and go home if they're sick and, yeah, you know, all those things.
So. Hopefully after 2 years, the kids, yeah, are getting better at washing,
yeah,
their hands.
Yeah. I think that's one positive outcome of all this.
Maybe even some adults.
Exactly.
Yeah. So how do you feel, Erica, about, like, how has your life changed in your role as superintendent? Is it less meetings? Because, I mean, there was a time, I think it was every day. It was almost seemed like your whole job was managing the pandemic at the district, and it was meeting with state people, the federal people, the, like, local, yeah, health people, mm-hmm, and things were changing day to day, so it was, yeah, needed because information was changing. And
yeah,
it's shifting. Are you still doing that every day?
It's shifting. It's shifting, and it feels, that part feels really good. And even when I'm having conversations with public health, that was one of the things that actually started to give me a little bit more hope, even in January and February, because when they started making the shift at public health, you know, away from contact tracing or, you know, toward things like looking at other things, you know, substance abuse issues again, and trying to look at, you know, children's health and, you know, health and nutrition. And I mean, that's where they were starting to move and realizing there are a lot of things that we need to be focusing on here. And if we're starting to move out of this in a way that feels and seems like it is safe and safer, you know, and not as much of an emergency, I guess, in that sense, then, you know, that feels like the right direction. And so, you know, I've definitely been having more conversations about, you know, curriculum and, you know, where are our kids in reading and how are we doing and what do we need to be thinking about? And, you know, it's kind of exciting to talk about hiring. We've got some different positions that are open, you know, with Bridget Whitstock, our fabulous special ed director, is retiring at the end of the year. And so we've posted for a new position for that. And, you know, there's a few positions, our music position, there's, you know, we've had some shifts with staff and people leaving and, you know, all those things that happen. So it's kind of exciting to think about that and think about next year and look at schedules and, yeah, and just, you know, talk about learning and life, you know, in addition to keeping everybody healthy. And
yeah,
it's nice to see that shift.
So just a couple more questions about the COVID before we move on. In terms of activities and events, like events on the school campus, at the gym, and at, let's say, the auditorium, mm-hmm, is that going to follow suit and masking will be optional, say, at, like, basketball games?
I think that it will move there. That's and at this point, we don't have any other really large-scale events taking place at the school because basketball, this is regionals this week. They're all in Ketchikan. Next week is maybe state, hopefully state, maybe for one or both of our teams, but... So as far as large events coming up inside, it will primarily might be things that might be maybe not even things that are necessarily related to the school. You know, the movie theater already has their protocols. They submit a mitigation plan to us. We would ask people to submit a plan, which is kind of what happens in the community in general. But, you know, essentially if people are using the facility and renting something, they'll put a plan together. We'll talk about that. Large-scale events coming, we will have graduation, and I'm assuming we'll probably ask people to kind of sit in maybe pod areas, that kind of thing, like we did last year. But again, who knows? That's a couple months off, and if things keep continuing the way they're going, it might look fairly traditional. I don't know. You know, it may look more like it has in the past. So, and then we're moving into baseball and track, so outdoor events, which is great. Everybody's outside. That always feels more comfortable now.
So, speaking of the spring sports, testing, is that going to stay the same for kids and activities? Like they've been required to biweekly test in order to travel and participate, compete with other teams. Mm-hmm. Is that going to also stand for the spring, mm-hmm, with the activities being outside?
Yeah. Mostly it is for the travel reasons. I'm just wanting to kind of keep that whole thing flowing. I believe most of the districts in Southeast are retaining that just because there's so much travel here that we do on planes and ferries. And that's different than up north. You know, a lot of places, they, if you're traveling in out of Anchorage, you get on a bus sort of like normal life elsewhere, you know. So it doesn't, I think it was easier for them to kind of peel back some of those requirements. But at this point, and that's where Mr. Cabral is too, and most of the districts in Southeast are retaining that. State events will not require masking at this point. So that's even regional, state basketball if we have kids that make it. It depends on the venue. So if it takes place at the...
I think it's in Wasilla this year, so they don't have
anything. So they don't have any masking or anything up there. So I think if it was on at the UAA, at the big arena that's...
Oh, UAA.
Then it would. And so, for example, that's what Region 5 actually just changed to this last week as well. So masking is dependent on the venue. So, for example, in Ketchikan, I believe that it's optional, but I don't want to say that even 100% because it kind of seems to change by the day. But like, for example, Juneau still has is still at universal masking in their district. So if we were going there for a Region 5 event, we would observe their policies. So
okay. All right. Yeah. You mentioned testing, looking at other things besides COVID. And Bridget Wistock, and you also mentioned Bridget Wistock, who I guess is retiring. I don't know that I had heard that, but she's the testing coordinator also. So she runs special ed and she's the testing coordinator for the district, right?
Yes.
Kind of double hat there.
Yeah, exactly.
So tonight she's going to be presenting on the update on the assessments that the kids take every year to kind of track them. And there's MAPS and then there's a newer test, right? It's AK-STAR. I was wondering if I actually said that right.
Yeah, it's called AK-STAR, and it's a summative assessment that is being created by NWEA, which is the Northwest Education Association that oversees and the MAP testing. So it's just sort of an addition to that, and the goal being, you know, the theory behind that, I think we've talked about it, is that, you know, we already do this 3 times a year testing for MAP so kids can see their growth, and parents can see the growth, you know, throughout a year and across years, and kids can set goals and see their strengths and see their weaknesses and all those kinds of things. So this would be a summative assessment. This year we're taking 4 tests total, 3 MAP tests and 1 summative assessment. Next year it would be 2 MAP tests in the fall and the winter, and then it would be this 1 summative assessment. So this will be a standard setting year. That's what Bridget always refers to it. That's what it is. This is the first year of doing this, so there's a lot to learn. She just came back from a training last week, actually, and she's like, it's a little bit like a fire hose, so we're trying to sort of work with the teachers on that, you know, piece by piece, and then the teachers are working with the kids to expose them to it, because it will be online again. It will be an online test, so there's a lot of technology and, of course, tools that come along with those that... can be challenging. They can be helpful for kids, but they can also be challenging. Sometimes they're not normally what they use. So trying to expose them to that without overwhelming, you know, can be a lot.
But I guess the good thing is that it is by the same, it's by the same company that the kids have been doing MAP tests for a while now.
Yeah.
So instead of having Peaks, which is like a totally different company doing, so you'd have 2 separate things going on.
Yeah. So hopefully it'll dovetail fairly well. I think it'll be pretty big lift this spring. I do think it'll be a lot for the kids and a lot for, you know, for teachers, but that's for everybody. You know, it's brand new and they're trying to work out as many of the bugs as they can ahead of time. But I'm sure there will be bugs, cause that's just life. And, you know, luckily our kids are great. They roll through things. They have good attitudes and they have pretty good skills, you know, in this world. So typically it's, they've got pretty good patience for it too. So moving forward.
Sarah, did you have anything to add about the assessments at the district?
I think they're helpful. That's for sure. Just with my own experience with my 2 kids, but, I think, I am adding to it, but talking to a few of the teachers that they've seen a good jump in growth from last fall. So contrary to statements made at the last meeting by a couple of community members who have no finger in the school district at all and would not know, I think the data will show otherwise. Mm-hmm.
So there was a little dip in the beginning of the pandemic. There was lots of virtual learning.
But they're definitely not failing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You mentioned staffing, and I was going to ask, we're in March, do you have an idea now of who's staying and who's going in terms of the teachers and which positions you'll have to fill?
We do. We're kind of narrowing that down each month. I mean, we did our tenured contracts, you know, in January, and then we have a number of non-tenured this month, and there may even be another one or two even the next month. We have until like May 1st to do those. So still looking at, you know, will it be the same number of elementary classrooms? Probably not. I think we talked about that with the library position, you know, how that evolved. Going to be moving, Miss Lenhart is going to be moving over from the high school to the elementary and being a librarian and a reading interventionist both. And then just the way the numbers of students are working out over there, we're kind of making a shift in, like this year there's 14 elementary classrooms and it will move down to 12. And those numbers are good. I mean, they're good. They're good sizes. They're good class numbers. It just has kind of worked out that way. So, I mean, still within that sort of 15 to 18 or 19, you know, number of range, which is great, you know, not just for COVID reasons, but just for life, you know, just having those numbers. So, but still having that support from Jill. And then, of course, Ms. Wormack was there. And then Ms. Powick was doing intervention across elementary and middle school this year. That was a new position, which we're hoping to retain again for a year, because we do certainly have kids that are in need of intervention. You know, there's always kids in need of intervention, and certainly over the last couple of years, we see that, you know, and not just in reading, but in math as well. So that extra support has been really helpful. And I think we have some information from Ms. Powick actually tonight to share as well from her experiences across kind of third through, you know, sixth or seventh grade.
Yeah, I think she went all the way to at least seventh.
Yeah. So that part is nice too, just to get a perspective on what she's seeing with some of those specific needs and really, you know, targeting those things this year and targeting those things again next year and beyond. I mean, I think that's something else just to remember for everybody, you know, that I think there's been a lot of focus on things like masking or things like that. But, you know, pulling off a mask doesn't change everything in the world related to school or COVID or anything, really. I mean, these last couple of years have been really challenging for our kids, challenging for our staff, our community. A lot of things have changed in people's homes and families, you know, the stress of different things with jobs or just social, emotional and mental health issues. You know, there's a lot of coming out of this is going to be challenging, and it's not just going to be like, boom, it's done. You know, we take a mask off and everybody's good, you know, kind of a thing. We'll be dealing with the effects of this for a while.
You mentioned, well, the reading, and that's, it seems like you're, maybe Petersburg is a little ahead of the curve addressing because of the Reads Act that we've talked about for a few years. I don't know if it slowed down a little bit during the pandemic, but the Alaska legislature's been talking about passing that, and that would have some specific things attached to it, like holding kids back if needed and those kinds of things. And so that's part of it, was intervening, wanting kids to be fluent readers by third grade, right?
Yep. And that goal, that research around that has not changed in years. That has been very much, I mean, that is a fact. You know, there's really no other research around that says that kids being proficient readers by third grade is not hugely important. You know, it has a huge impact on every other subject area, including math and science and all those things. So that research is pretty clear. The state has done, is doing a lot of work around providing trainings. For example, they've got 6 sessions coming up this spring. I'm signed up for them. A number of teachers are as well, that they're providing hour and a half sessions on, you know, just sort of the science of reading. And there is a lot to the science of reading, and there are a lot of strategies, a lot of research around that. So that's an option for all staff this spring, and that's being, you know, provided by the state. So I think they're doing a good job of talking about this and having goals, and then, you know, trying to actually put, you know, resources behind it, you know, whether it's financial or people or both, you know, support for districts that are really struggling if they're in a kind of a targeted assistance, actually getting, you know, specialists out to the districts to actually work with teachers, work with families, work with kids. So I think it's heading in the right direction. I do think it's going there. I don't know where they've landed on some of the specifics around, like, retention. That was a big conversation last year. Don't believe that it's a required part of that, both pieces of legislation, but it's definitely something that has to be discussed with families. A lot of parent notification within that process as well. Looking at our preschool this year, that's something else that's a part of it too. They're looking at the early childhood component and preschool, you know, helping kids get prepared for school, and not necessarily hammering them with flashcards, but actually helping them be prepared to be, you know, work with other children and get along and play. And I mean, there's, again, a lot of research about that too. If we don't have them ready to do those things, you can give them all the flashcards you want. If they're not ready. So I think really just helping kids be ready to learn, you know, when they come to school. So
it sounds like you're supportive of the READS Act, with maybe some shifts in the future as it goes. But for right now, it's, like you said, headed in the right direction.
I think so. I mean, I think we should all be able to agree that kids being able to read well or read close to proficient by third grade is a game changer, you know, for kids.
Do you have anything to add, Sarah?
Oh, I'm concerned about some of the details of the impact and the workload that it'll put on staff, mm-hmm. Specifically teachers. Again, it's frustrating when we do have a good program and then to have the state come and basically do the same thing statewide when you might have, some of these districts don't have reading specialists. They need that help. Mm-hmm. I feel like we've done a good job for many years already, and so it just feels like more paperwork. And that maybe not feels, it will be more paperwork for our staff who are already drowning in paperwork. And so then you're not only, mm-hmm. you've got to come up with a plan when you're, you know, when a student's not reading at proficiency, and it kind of ignores the fact that this child goes home every night and may or may not have a, you know, be young for their age. Because I think of my own experience with my own child being a slow to get there reader, but she's getting there. She's, you know, we work at home, but it doesn't it puts so much burden on the school without any accountability on the parents and the family. And the reality is some families will never be able to help their child at home. They're just, it's the environment. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to see schools penalized and teachers penalized for that. They're just, you know what, we do the best we can, and at the end of the day, it is what it is, mm-hmm. but more paperwork is not going to solve it.
Yeah,
and that's what I'm really worried about, is just all the extra paperwork that will drive good teachers away from the profession, because it's not worth it, you know, to be mm-hmm. drowning in paperwork over something mm-hmm. that they're already doing really well with their students.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's, that, you know, sense. And I mean, I can lobby that to the state till I'm blue in the face, but they may or may not listen. There's mm-hmm. nothing I can do about it.
Sounds like you definitely want at least some money attached to it from the state to make it, to implement it.
And I'm not even sure money would solve it. You have, you know, there's only so many hours in a day, and you're mm-hmm. asking a teacher to spend now even more hours doing paperwork over their 15 students and how they're progressing in just reading. Mm-hmm. And they're, never mind all the other stuff that they're doing in their classroom to keep track of how they're, and you're not dealing with one teacher and one subject. You're talking to K through fifth graders who are teaching multiple subjects all day long. Mm-hmm. And I'm more concerned with how much more time they're going to have to spend doing what I see as busy work, especially if you've already got proficient readers, but now you have to now prove it, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. to the state. And then it's like, well, is somebody at the state checking all that? It sounds to me, my impressions of it is busy work. Mm-hmm. That it may be, the goal is there and the intent is there, but I'm not sure it's going to end up being successful. I could be wrong,
right.
And I hope I am.
Yeah, and I think that that's a big part of the legislative lobbying that's happening right now, as far as people being able to provide that feedback. And in fact, we're going again in March. I'm actually going up in March. And this is one of the big ones that we have meetings about now, and will continue to, because that's a huge concern that a lot of places have, is just what Sarah's saying. And it's some of the feedback we've been giving over the last couple of years, which is why I think it ends up getting somewhat bogged down, because it gets there, you know, where people are questioning that, like, how much can we do for, you know, within a regular classroom for this? Can you write literally like an IEP for every, you know, for every student? And who can do that, you know? And so that is the rub, I think, right now, because I think, like we mm-hmm. said, we can all agree that that goal is clearly should be the goal. But how we get there and what's required within that, and how many, you know, how often do the screeners need to be given, and if kids are where they need to be, can we be done doing some of those things, and can we take those off the list, and you know, that kind of thing. So I do think at least they're hearing that, which is why I think it has gotten bogged in the past. We'll see where it goes. I mean, I don't know where it will go, you know, because there's kind of a lot of pressure around it too. But I think having it be reasonable expectations as well, you know, and that's my point even about these last couple of years. I think we have to acknowledge that, you know, that kids are making growth, and we know this. But yeah, we can't ignore, you know, the craziness of last fall with November outbreak and disruptions, and last year in February. I mean, even as we're putting together the presentation for tonight to talk about map testing and trying to look like from 1 year to the next, February of last year, we got through our elementary middle testing for the January, you know, January, February time period. And then we had a closure for about a week. And well, that was during the window. So we have a segment of our middle school that does not have a winter test, mm-hmm. you know, because that's just the way it is. That's the window, and it's closed, you know? Mm-hmm. We can't ignore those disruptions, you know, within that. So I think that's also a big part of the feedback, you know, the testimony that we've been giving to mm-hmm. the legislature on all this. You know, it's like, we have to be reasonable, you know, mm-hmm. within this. So we'll see where it goes.
Mm-hmm. Maybe not take the reading test scores from like the middle of the pandemic to start with.
Right. Let's be reasonable about these goals and what they might look like and how they can actually be effective.
And I'm often frustrated because I think they can legislate improvement, and it's like you can in some ways, but mm-hmm. what is really needed is probably reading specialists in every school district mm-hmm. and multiple ones.
Yeah.
And so that's to me where the funding should be going toward is mm-hmm. just finding those reading specialists who then are so well trained to just deal with reading, or math specialists to so well trained. It seems like a better mm-hmm. source of funding. And if you have already a reading specialist at your district, and your district is meeting certain guidelines, then great, we'll help fund that mm-hmm. and keep it moving.
Yeah.
But if you're doing a good job, let's not dump more paperwork on you, which is what I feel like it feels to me, me personally, you know, even though I don't work in the district, but it's like, it just, the more I've read about it, I'm just like, this just seems like more busy work. Not, it's important to know where your students are, of course, but I feel like our teachers do a pretty good job already figuring out where they're at and when they need help. And it just adds more layers of paperwork.
Well, that makes sense. If there's a student that's proficient in reading and always has been,
why would you have to read a report about it?
keep proving that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today for Campus Connection. Again, the regular school board meeting will take place tonight at 6 p.m. at the high school library and over Ring Central video conferencing. To participate in the meeting, of course, you can do that in person, but you need to be part of Ring Central, and you can get the password from the school district office for that. And you can always listen to the meeting if you just want to listen. We'll be broadcasting it live on KFSK. All right, great. We'll see you tonight.
All right, thank you.